Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Georgia Wrestling Now, a production brought to you by the GWH Radio Network, where we bring you the latest news and information on the local wrestling scene in and around Georgia, as well as interviews with newsmakers. And now, the GWH Radio Network presents Georgia Wrestling Now.
This is the final edition of Georgia Wrestling Now of the summer. My name is Jonathan Williams from WrestlingWithPopCulture.com, being joined by Matt Hankins. How are you tonight, Matt?
I'm doing all right. I guess that means our numbers will go up now that the summer's over, because you can't draw during the summer, right?
That's right, especially not on podcasts. Everybody's out doing what they do in the summer and not listening to podcasts.
No, heaven to no. Certainly not listening to podcast. No reception at the beach.
Right. Well, we got a big show tonight. I feel like I say that every week, but it's always true. But tonight we've got, I guess currently she's with Global Force Wrestling, and as a result is back on Impact Wrestling because of the whole invasion thing or whatever is going on there. But she's a former Ohio Valley Wrestling Women's Champion and a former Allied Independent Wrestling Federation's World Women's Champion. And her name is Lady Tapa. She's the niece of the Barbarian, and she will be taking on Miss Rachel at Sacred Ground Chapter 6 this Saturday. So looking forward to talking to her in a little while. But we got half an hour to kill, Matt. So anything on your mind?
Dissertation time. Pretty big weekend.
Were you at PCW on Saturday or Southern Pride or both?
I was just at PCW. That being the final show before Sacred Ground, all my attention was focused squarely on the home fires, and they burned pretty bright. We had a lot going on. Still things to be submitted for Sacred Ground. We got confirmation from Shane Marks that he indeed would take on the Carpenter at Sacred Ground, and that's a thing that's been burning hot for a while. And Shane Marks has not had a victory over the Carpenter in any way, shape, or form. He's sort of been his Achilles heel, if you will. And I talked about it a little bit last year with Sacred Ground Chapter 5. As successful as Shane Marks has been in his PCW career, by far the most decorated individual there, Sacred Ground is not always his time to shine, so it's not going to get any easier. And in addition to that, we also had Johnny Danger and Devlin Valick, who I don't think is any stretch to say the most surprising team to advance this far in the tag team season final, or tag team season, make their way to the final by getting a victory over Carpenter and the recently, let's just say, the attitude change of Trevor Aeon, who ended up being Carpenter's partner. And in addition to that, we saw some tag team action. And, I mean, BFD, Jeter and Blaze versus Dementia DeRose and Bill the Butcher was exactly what you'd think it would be, just big bodies slugging at each other. But the movement and the young blood might have stolen the show. They opened the thing, good solid 15-20 minute match back and forth, and just absolutely laid it out there. And those are two teams that I think next year may be their years to really step it up.
Well, it sounds like things are definitely building towards a great event this Saturday. I have a question about Trevor Aeon, actually.
Yes.
And I would assume maybe you can answer it, given your affiliation and your position at PCW now, but he won the Platinum Royal last year at Sacred Ground, correct?
No, he was in the final, but he did not win it. Bobby Moore actually won it.
Okay.
He was the last man in it, but Bobby Moore had thrown out the most people, so.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Then I don't have a question at all.
as to why he didn't get a title shot? Was that the question?
Yes. For some reason, I thought – I wasn't there, but I thought I had read a report or heard that he was the winner, and I was just curious if he ever got his title shot. But I guess he was not entitled to a title
and
shot.
And perhaps that was – that played into him – maybe he thought he won it, and that played into him attacking Johnny Danger beforehand and sort of breaking the hearts of the Port of the Faithful, because he'd been a guy that the people just loved out there. And he didn't even have entrance music. You know, that when the people wanted to see Trevor, they'd just chant, "Let us see," and out he would come, and he would defend the honor of Porterdale. Well, he was not in a defending mood Saturday night, for certain.
Well, I am not happy to hear that, because I am friends with both of those guys, and have even seen them. I don't know if they ever officially tagged in MCW, but I know they. It looked like things were going that way at one point.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
it shocked us all, that's for sure. Trevor was, and he was not bashful about speaking on it either. He punctuated his explanation with a slap to Johnny's face, and so it was off to the races from there.
So no questioning is I don't know about his motives, but no questioning his intentions, I guess, there.
No, there was no ambiguity. And I did not see the Southern Fried Show, but I read the written report from Larry Goodman. Looks like that in the face of some tough circumstances, they got through it. I certainly know how that is. And it's not easy to do. They got through it. Some surprises, though. Surprising to see. I'll never remember his name. Hayden something winning that Cruiserweight Cup. That is a shock, because he was certainly in there with some heavyweights, and he came out at the better end of it.
I skimmed over the reports before the show. I'm not familiar with that person, but
I am not either. And I looked around to try to, you know, see if I could catch a glimpse of him, see some video, and I could not find anything. So I don't know who he might be. I know they had a contingent up from Florida. Perhaps he is a part of that group. I'm not sure. And I did do my research. I tried my best to figure it out. I was hoping we'd have Charles tonight and he might could explain it, but I just could not figure out who he was. But they did reveal what this whole Southern Fried Mafia thing that they had been – I thought it was just a T-shirt for the promotion. But no, as it turned out, it was the forming of a new group being led up by the returning Roscoe Ray. So, again, as you said, we're changing seasons, so there's a lot of changes going on in the scene.
Absolutely. Well, you can read Larry's report at gwhnewsandnotes.blogspot.com. I will try to talk to Charles and find out who this guy is. Maybe we can get him on the show and find out more about him or something. Speaking of seasons changing, I went to Atlanta Wrestling Entertainment's event yesterday, and they have a season format that they go by. So they're in season two right now, which, as we talked about, I believe last week, has been a great season for them so far. And despite the fact that it was a week after arguably their biggest show yet.
I don't think it's arguably. I think it is their biggest show yet. And that's
the one with Sabu.
They've done before, but, you know, you got to have a high watermark somewhere, and they certainly hit what was theirs to this point last week.
Yeah. So 1 week removed from their biggest show to date, headlined by Sabu and Murder One, in a show that I didn't see a whole lot of promotion of even who was on the card or what matches were going to happen. It was mostly just free beer with a ticket,
sure.
Which I guess was good enough. They had a crowd.
Not a bad way to get people in the building, baby.
Yeah, I would say 40 to 50 people. I believe there's a report from AWE's own Josh Wheeler on gwhnewsandnotes.blogspot.com as well. But I had talked to Josh after the show with Sabu, and he made it sound like it's going to be a small show, you know, mostly local talent, but that wasn't the case at all. There were plenty of out-of-state people. A guy named Grizz made his debut, who I believe was also at SFCW.
The Southern Fried Show.
So, you know, a lot of stuff happened, a lot of things moved forward, and then they had something going on afterwards I didn't stick around for, but apparently they've got some sort of TV thing in the works, and I don't really know if I'm even supposed to say that, but they invited everyone to stick around, me included, so I assume it's okay for me to at least mention it. But since I didn't stick around, I don't know all the details about it. But there was an Adult Swim film crew there when I was leaving. So not sure what that's about. I'm sure we'll hear more about it in the coming weeks. One of the reasons I didn't stick around was because I had already kind of obligated myself to watch Night of Champions at a friend's house. So did you watch that, Matt?
I caught up on it, and I saw everything from Cena and Rollins on through. So I saw the last couple matches. I was coming back home from Birmingham. I was doing my patriotic duty of supporting the U.S. Women's National Soccer Team. So I did that and busted it back home and got to see a good bit of it. But I got caught up on it, so I saw kind of everything that went on. Rough in the main event to hear about Sting, which that appears to be a real serious injury he sustained in there on that second buckle bomb, which he had avoided catastrophe earlier by missing that monitor slightly. So it was definitely, if that's the one that sends him out, he went out on his shield, that's for sure.
Yeah, I agree. It looked to me like he did hit his head on the monitor, so I was wondering if it was just something that maybe, you know, didn't kick in for a few minutes or whatever, but yeah. I haven't read exactly what the injury is, aside from the fact that it could be career ending, but it was clear that something happened. He seemed to be on his way to winning his first WWE World Heavyweight Championship, and all of a sudden kind of was stumbling around, and the guy in the black shirt, I don't know what his role is, but it's always serious when the guy in the black shirt comes and checks on someone.
And he continued on for a bit. And, you know, also on that show, they had another fan jump the guardrail and make it to the ring. That's a rough one, man. And especially, I'll give our promotions here a lot of credit. Most places that I'm at now have security ready to go, and that stays to a minimum, if not at all, and it gets handled very quickly. So perhaps that's something they should learn too. You know, guardrails aren't the only thing to keep the fans back.
Yeah. And of course, you know, I heard about something that happened at PWX with Gunner, I guess a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
I haven't watched any video of it or anything.
For a while. I saw what they released, you know, they kind of played it to their advantage. But it was one of those deals where sort of everybody was a little bit wrong, and nobody was quite as wrong as everybody made each side out to be. You know, but again, sort of a local Gunner. And, you know, that's the weird thing about it. From what I know of Gunner, that's a bit out of character for him. So it kind of took me back a little bit, but, you know, it's hard to get in anyone's head in that situation. Cause I mean, you don't know, you don't know. In most cases, it's just somebody who's gotten too excited and they're trying to be a part of the show. And that can speak to some of the attitudes of wrestling fans in general. But I hate to be that guy, but in this day and age, man, you don't know. I mean, movie theaters, schools, churches, none of those things are nearly as safe as they were a few years ago. So you kind of got to keep your guard up. But at the same time, you got to assess the situation properly because there's a lot that can go wrong in that situation.
Right. Yeah, that was an awkward moment on a pay-per-view last night, but they seemed to handle it very well and quickly. I was disappointed. What I was hoping, well, wouldn't say hoping, what I was thinking was probably going to happen was that Sting would win the title.
Yeah.
And then be able to put that notch in his belt.
Yeah.
And put that in the record books. And then Sheamus would probably cash in and leave with the title. But as we saw, that didn't happen. I think they did the best they could with what was going on, though. So,
yeah. I mean, you know, you got to got to think on the fly. I was just talking about with Southern Fried. You kind of got to move on the fly sometimes. And I think given Sting's injury and everything that did happen, they covered themselves well and everybody got out safe. So that's in that situation, that's all you can hope for.
Yeah. And I'm hoping that Kane coming back with the mask on is leading up to something. You know, there's a lot of speculation on WrestleMania being in Texas and The Undertaker and blah, 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 blah. But I've been saying for a while, I would like to see if this is going to be his retirement match at the next WrestleMania. I think it should be against Kane, given the history and the fact that it's in Texas, Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Right.
But and the only way it would really make any sense if it's Kane is if he's some version of the original Kane with a mask and tormented and all that.
Yeah.
So I'm sure he's got Seth Rollins at the next pay-per-view or something in Hell in a Cell first. And of course, Undertaker, I believe Undertaker and Brock Lesnar are facing each other at that event as well. But I'm really hoping that that's building towards something. So that remains to be seen, of course. But back to Gunnar, I meant to mention this a moment ago. I believe I saw that the Fans of Wrestling podcast debut here on the Georgia Wrestling History Radio Network, their guest was Gunnar. So I don't know if they addressed the PWX thing at all. I'm sure.
That was their intent, I'm sure.
Yeah. So listen to that.
Did you hear anything about the Stranglehold show? We talked a lot about that last week.
I heard it was, yes, it was standing room only. I believe capacity was about 200 people, so it was essentially sold out. I heard it was, the matches were all great, and they are planning another show in about a month. I don't know if they officially announced a date yet, but as we talked about last week, their plan is to run monthly. So it sounds like they're off to a strong start, and monthly is going to be the way to go for them.
I think that's a good plan. You know, the first one sometimes is the easy one. You know, it's easy to drum up excitement on possibility. But if they delivered, then who knows? That area has been underserved for sure. Not to say anything disparaging about AWN, but that area has always supported multiple promotions.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Rampage has been gone for, 2 years now?
Yeah, it sounds weird to say that, but I think that's about right.
Nobody stepped in.
The fact that they're working with AWN, I really like, because, you know, there was a controversy in Cornelia probably, that was about 2 years ago too now, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
You know, whenever somebody else pops up and somebody else's quote-unquote territory, it's always controversial, but it sounds like they're actually working together and they've got very different products. So
yeah,
it seems like that's a very Southern wrestling thing though, because, you know, even what was the ECW arena after ECW ran multiple different wrestling shows, sometimes on the same day they'd have, you know, Ring of Honor and CZW or something like that. So it's good to see those kind of relationships happening and hopefully staying on good terms with each other, because I think that just benefits
everybody. For everybody when they stay on good terms. You know, we had the UIW Peach State dust up, but once all that settled down, everybody seemed to do better off once all the bad blood was gotten past. You know, PCW and Southern Pride operate a half hour from each other, and we function just fine. You know, what they do doesn't impact us. What we do doesn't impact them. It's a great place for the guys who can, when it's worked out, they can do both shows. When we're not doing, or when they're not running, their monthly shows. So when we're running, sometimes we see their fans over there. Sometimes our people leave, go over there. You know, it's easy to do. There's a way to do it as long as you don't step on any toes. Then it tends to work out. I certainly understand the opposite of that too. When you've put in hard work to build up an area, and you've got a good reputation and you've delivered on the things you said you were going to do, and someone else comes in and, you know, usually a lot of times the case is someone will come in with a lot of possibly name talent or, you know, they're running a bigger venue or something, and they just pop up, they do what they do, and if they don't hold up their end of the bargain, then wrestling is what takes the hit. You know, people don't necessarily associate the negative with the particular promotion that did the thing. They just say, oh, man, that's wrestling. That time I went to wrestling out there, they said that, you know, Buff Bagwell was going to be there, and somebody named Ron Shagwell showed up, and now they're just mad at wrestling. And that's the thing you got to worry about, you know. People will say that, oh, they killed the town, and that's one of those excuses similar to you can't draw in the summer that gets overused, but there certainly are scenarios where that is absolutely the truth, when someone has come in and just made it harder on anybody who wants to do a good wrestling show to do it there.
Right. And at the same time, I think for whatever reason, egos are so fragile in the wrestling business that
I think you got that wrong, Jonathan. I've never dealt with anybody who just had a bruised ego for no reason in the wrestling business.
I stand corrected. But, you know, whenever there is a threat or even the indication of a possible threat, you said, you know, you used the phrase stepping on toes. I think sometimes people stick their toes out to be stepped on.
That's true. I wouldn't argue with that. It is very, like you mentioned, you know, the situation in Cornelia, and that's one of those things that just kind of won't go away, because in the absence of anarchy, you know, someone else popped up to occupy that second and fourth slot, and I'm sure that when what was anarchy commences again, there could be a resurgence of bad blood in that area. Something about that place, it just seems to lend itself to that.
Yeah, but, I mean, it seems, I didn't know that there still was, I mean, I know there always will be a little bit, but it seemed like that all sort of worked itself out, and, you know, each promotion was putting on shows that kind of spoke for themselves, and people made their decisions, and there was some crossover between the two promotions as far as fan base goes, but,
yeah.
You know, I don't think anarchy really ever had anything to worry about because the products were so different.
They're anarchy.
but then, you know whatever like the new version earlier is going to be, will kind of be starting fresh.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to be branded differently and everything. So,
and I look for that to be incredibly different than what was there before. Once they establish themselves, it's possible that when they start back up, they could. You know, I'm sure there'll be a very similar roster in the beginning, but, you know, as, you know, someone with new ownership has new ideas, and they're gonna do what they feel is right, and I think that will eventually look very different than it had previously. That poses its own opportunities, but its own sets of challenges as well, because, I mean, no place is as rooted in a specific style of wrestling like Anarchy was. You know, PCW is pretty close. In that, you know, we've been kind of doing the same kind of PCW thing now for a while in a couple of different places. But, you know, Anarchy was the benchmark for so long that those people became accustomed to a very, very distinct style. But that might play to the new promotion's advantage in that maybe they don't have to focus on how TV is taped, or maybe they can bring in a lot of fresh faces and get that crowd behind them.
Right. Well, speaking of promotions coming in with big name talent and whatnot, next week it looks like we're going to have Ricky Morton on the show, and he's part of this Big Time Wrestling. Have you seen their posters?
I haven't recently. I think I might have in the past, but I haven't seen anything just recently. Where are they going to be?
I've never heard of it before now, but it looks like it's a promotion that tours.
Okay.
I do have a Facebook page with multiple dates that, you know, each date is in a different state. So
yeah.
They're going to be on October 2nd at Georgia, but they have advertised Ric Flair, Kevin Nash, Hacksaw, Russell Express, So the entire card is big names.
Yeah.
From what I can tell.
I'm starting to see that a little bit more these days. I don't know. I always, you know, try to keep a read on what's going on. It feels like that perhaps there's a bit of a renaissance happening. You know, I would have – you look back 6 months ago or so when Destination America had TNA and ROH both on television and, you know, WWE was doing their thing and NXT was making their move. It felt like maybe about to hit a boom, but given what's going on with Destination America, that might have been sort of a fool's goal a bit, but – I am seeing a lot more of those shows. I know Southern Legacy Wrestling is another promotion that is doing a very similar thing. They're taking some of that talent that has opened it up and is not contracted anymore, and they're just kind of aggregating it, and they're going to run a show in this town and run a show in this town and run a show in this town. So, you know, that used to be the way it was done. So perhaps we have all pined for the territory days to come back at some level among most wrestling fans. And we might be seeing an attempt at that. Same thing with, like, the AIWF. Their name is certainly getting bigger and more prominent, or at least more voluminous than it had been.
Yeah, I agree. I meant to mention this earlier in the show, but since you brought up old territory days, it reminded me that as we mentioned last week, the Resurrection of Jake the Snake is screening two more nights. One of them is tonight. Do not encourage you to go right now, mm-hmm. because not only would you be missing our show, but you'd also be late to the movie. But tomorrow night, they're screening it once again at Landmark Midtown Arts Cinema. And Jake the Snake, Diamond Dallas Page, Scott Hall, and some of the film crew are scheduled to be there. They're also there tonight, but again, you want to go tomorrow and see the movie, meet the stars, meet the DDP yoga crew, all of that. So you can go to, I guess the best place to go is jakethesnakemovie.com to find out more about that and buy tickets and all that kind of stuff. But it's in Midtown, right across from Piedmont Park, so if you're in the Atlanta area, go check it out. And there are also additional dates in the near future in other cities across the country. So if you're not in Georgia and you listen to Georgia Wrestling Now for whatever reason, you can check out that website and find out more. You can also go to wrestlingwithpopculture.com and read my interview with director Steve Yu, who, I guess as the term director implies, directed the movie. He's also in the movie and was kind of immersed in the whole situation with DDP and Jake. So, interesting perspective, I guess, from his point of view. I just wanted to mention that real quick before Lady Tapa calls in, which should be any moment now.
And I'm certainly a sucker for the wrestling documentary. I mean, there are a few things I enjoy more than a wrestling documentary. And it always shocked me how the arc is usually very much the same, but I'll get invested every time. Every single time I'll be like, ooh, I wonder if this is going to happen. And in most cases, I know already how the thing's going to end, but like, oh, maybe there's something I forgot.
Have you seen Memphis Heat?
Oh, yeah. Memphis Heat is, I mean, Jackie Fargo for no other reason.
Right.
He's just the best. He is just the best. And have you seen the Iron Sheik one that Netflix has? Now I know. Again, that's sort of a local connection here. A lot of that happened here.
No, I haven't had a chance to. I actually was trying to get him on the show back around the time that movie came out. But just kind of, you know, we had some back and forth that just never came to fruition.
It's a rough one. It's a tough one, man, because of the Iron Sheik that we kind of know now is that guy that just flies off the handle and says crazy stuff and it's funny and you kind of get a laugh like, ah, that's just Sheik being Sheik. And then you see kind of the things that led him down the path to be that dude, and man, it is just a punch in the gut. There's not a lot of levity to be had in that one.
Yeah, I don't know a whole lot about why he got to where he was, but I know he was pretty bad off, you know, a lot of drug issues and things like that. I know people who saw it firsthand and You know, it was just people that were very, very similar, like you said, very similar to the Jake the Snake story. People that were trying to help him, and you know, sometimes people just don't want to be helped. Maybe I don't know. You know, it's different for each person, I guess. But yeah, if that's still on Netflix, I'm going to look it up.
Yeah, it's a tough one. It's definitely worth the watch, but you might want to get a Kleenex nearby and hope that nobody's watching. It'll get you. It will get you.
Well, that's true of the Jake the Snake one as well. But you know, it's a very positive story. You know, obviously, you know, spoiler alert, he was inducted into the Hall of Fame and all that. So So and you know, he seems to still be doing well. From what I've heard and seen and read.
And I don't know,
you know,
I was having this conversation with someone the other day about, you know, what makes it so tough for guys to step away from wrestling. And, you know, the thing we got to talk about was, you know, I'm sure that if you were at the level that Jake was, of course you missed the adulation of fans and you miss being, having that level of fame and all those things. But what it kind of comes down to, I think, is just you miss the boys and being in the locker room and just hanging out and just being around like-minded guys that go through the same thing you do. And I think I would like to think that Jake being here in this area and there being so many promotions he could go to and just sit around and kind of remember the good times might have helped out a lot, because, I mean, he was all over the place for a couple years here. And the same story with Scott Hall, you know, just being around, and that I would imagine that has some positive impact on, you know, every day you wake up and you got a struggle to go through. Well, maybe it's Saturday and I'm getting to go to a different town and see some old pals and talk to the kids and tell them what they're doing wrong and what they're doing right. That has to help somewhat.
Yeah, and I think you know, another one of those common stories with these documentaries and whatnot is the lack of a healthy family, you know, legit family, actual family, you know, whether it's abuse or whatever, just if they're, you know, you don't get what you need from your actual blood relatives, but you find this odd brotherhood / family sort of relationship in wrestling that's obviously often very dysfunctional.
Absolutely. But when it's clicking, man, it is. Those are some of the, you know, I came here not knowing a soul. You know, I moved here with a job, you know, 5-6 years ago and didn't know a soul here. And the majority of the people that I spend my free time with are people that I've met through wrestling in some form or fashion. And it definitely is just one of those things that's the thing that you, no matter how clued in you are to the going zone of wrestling, no matter, you know, you can know everything, you can read every report, you can be completely up on everything, but being in a locker room and just palling around with guys is the thing that nobody on the other side of the guardrail can really get a grasp on. And that's essential to having a good show. I mean, you got to trust the guy you're in there with.
Right. Well, we keep having these nice segues tonight, and that's a nice segue, I think, into tonight's guest, because from the way things look, she has a healthy relationship, at least with her uncle, Uncle Barbarian. Hopefully is okay to call him that. But looks like she's joining us now, Lady Tapa. I don't know about you, Matt, but I'm bowing down. Welcome to the show, Lady Tapa. How are you tonight?
Good. How are you?
Doing all right. So, we were talking about the Jake the Snake Roberts documentary, which is screening tonight and tomorrow in Atlanta. Have you seen that movie?
I haven't.
I saw a picture of you in DDP. Have you ever done the DDP yoga thing, or was that just a meeting at a convention or something like that?
Yeah, I was at a convention, and I met him, and he was telling me different things to try and get his DVD, and I told him I would. I haven't gotten it yet because I don't know. I might need to get it so I can be more flexible, I guess. And it's
well, it's certainly not easy. I can tell you that right now.
So you have it? You tried it?
I do. It's got a lot of dust on it, but I did play it a couple times. And all those things looked really tough.
I've
maybe
done
you can teach me
yoga
something and I can use that in the ring or something. I don't know.
If you can get somebody in any of those positions, I think you'll get a quick victory out of it.
Hey, that sounds good to me.
Now, this lady Tapa we hear on the phone seems very, some would even say innocent and sweet, but I've seen you in the ring, and I know better than that. I would have to believe that part of that may be that theme music, that when that comes on, a transformation happens.
Yes. When that music comes on, I turn into a lady, Tapa. Outside of the ring, everyone says, you have such a sweet voice. You're so soft, so nice. But when it's time to compete in the ring, I turn into a whole nother person. My alter ego is ready to dominate and make them all better.
And, did I hear right that you were taking a break from class tonight to join us?
Yes, I actually just finished training on jiu-jitsu.
Yeah,
I also do jiu-jitsu, and I started last year, and I'm a blue belt now. So I have some competition coming up, some tournaments, so I'm just getting ready for that, plus wrestling shows. So it's exciting stuff, but I love it.
Way to take it easy. Way to just lay out and take it easy.
I know, right?
I am sure your opponent, Ms. Rachel, does not want to hear any of that. What are you doing to get ready for your Sacred Ground Chapter 6 performance coming up this Saturday?
Well, I've been doing some homework on her. I've never met her before or anything, so I figured I'd look up some stuff on YouTube to see how she works and just prepare my mind mentally for what to expect from her. So, you know, I'm not sure she knows I'm like 6 feet tall, very strong and dominant. So I hope she's ready because I'm ready.
I hope she is too. She is certainly beloved by the people of PCW, but I'm sure that's going to all be put to a very strict test, especially given that the man who arranged all this is one Quasimandisco who, you know, I understand that business is business, but I just want to let you know, that guy's terrible.
Oh, he's terrible?
He is terrible. So the pairing of you and him is certainly something that's going to be no one's going to want to miss it because I'm terrified of what he might inspire you to do, let's say.
Well, anything can happen in wrestling, so we'll see. I might have to pull him in the ring, huh?
Well, he does have a history of overloading himself, so if you feel the need to get him corrected, by all means, you have my full support. I can tell you that right now.
Well, I'll keep that in mind. Yep. But I'm excited.
So,
this is my first time working with them and coming to Atlanta. I've never done a show in Atlanta before, so it'll be interesting. And
really?
I'm excited. Mm-hmm.
That is surprising because you are certainly someone who has been all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
And Atlanta's one of those places that there's always wrestling.
Yeah. And I was just down in Atlanta about 3 weeks ago. I was down over there competing in a jiu-jitsu tournament, an Atlanta Open Championship. And I'm so happy I came out on top. It was tough, but it was exciting to win the gold medal and made all my opponents bow down. So it was great.
Is the skill set for that roughly the same as far as preparation and execution? Is it the same process for you, or is it two completely different worlds?
Well, as far as wrestling, like training, we learn jiu-jitsu, different things in jiu-jitsu, but also wrestling plays a big part of it. And as far as like different takedowns and different movesets that you can use, so plus strength, you know. And when you're competing against girls in your weight class and you've never met them before or anything, and you show up, you know, you never know what to expect. You just try to play your game and what you train to do. So that's how I feel about that. And so far it's been working.
And you said you started that about a year ago. Is that something you've always been interested in and just decided to take a go at it?
Yes. After I finished with TNA, I figured I can go ahead and take that time to start training in jiu-jitsu, because my goal is also to step in the MMA ring. So I found a school here in Charlotte, North Carolina, and started training. And then my coaches are helping me to get my game down in jiu-jitsu with different submissions, and plus the wrestling background and striking game. So I'm excited. Our goal is for next year to debut in my first MMA match. So I'm excited, and I want to incorporate, you know, wrestling and MMA, doing both and bringing it together as a female athlete of my size. So I'm excited.
Pretty good background to have. You certainly, some of the more accomplished, or I should say popular UFC guys over the last little while have been able to bring sort of the showmanship that wrestling breeds to it, and really make themselves out of that. Because, I mean, there's a UFC school that seems like every block and everybody you meet has a tap-out shirt. It's got to be hard to stand out in that game, and having a wrestling background, I'm sure, certainly helps.
Yeah, it does. And you meet all kinds of people. When you go to these tournaments to compete in jiu-jitsu, you meet all kinds of people with different backgrounds of wrestling or boxing and judo, and it's amazing. And you learn a lot of different things. So it also helps me in wrestling, you know. It really does, because it just my mindset, like when I first started wrestling training in 2001, I trained under George Self and my uncle the Barbarian. And about 6-7 months when they felt I was ready, I had my first debut match in 2012 in the independent scene. And from there, I just worked around, you know, the independent scene, and I got an opportunity. I seen that TNA was coming to Fayetteville, North Carolina for a gut check seminar. So I figured I'd submit my information and resume, like, to see if I can go to this seminar. And when I went to that seminar, after the seminar, a week later, I got a phone call from Al Snow, asking me if I wanted to come up to TNA and compete for a contract in the TNA gut check. And I was so excited because I couldn't believe, you know, that I have opportunity. I was just like, no, whatever comes, I'm just going to take it, because I'm still learning along the way. And then from there, went to do the gut check and competed with Eva Lise, which she's a great competitor too. And then happened to get the contract, and that's where my career really started in wrestling with TNA. So it was exciting.
And that's a long time, you know, to go from what you said started in when you trained to when you actually kind of really made a sort of a profession out of it. Was it your decision always to wait that long, or was it people having the right people around you saying, no, you're not? Because, I mean, clearly you have the look, you have the lineage. It would be very, I won't say very easy, let me say, it should be a little more easy for you to kind of break in somewhere, but maybe before your time. Was it just people telling you, well, let's hold off till you get this down, till you get this down, till you get this down?
It was actually just, like, I spoke with my uncle about it. I spoke with George Staff, you know, just to see, like, you know, you think this is good for me to do? And they told me, any opportunity is an opportunity, and when an opportunity comes, you take it and you run with it. So I took that as, like, okay, I felt in my heart, this is the opportunity. Let's see where it can go. And I took it and ran with it. And, you know, it's a blessing because I learned so much. It taught me a lot of different things about wrestling and, like, about how to work TV and everything. Because during this time, I was still in the process of learning and growing because meeting a lot of the talent in TNA, they've been doing it for a very long time. Where I'm coming in, you know, 2 years in, still, like, trying to figure out who I am in the ring, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so being able to learn from all of them and get advice from, like, Al Snow. And from that gut check, I moved to Kentucky so I can train when TNA was over there at OVW at the time. I moved down there to train under OVW and TNA until they pulled me up to TV to work with Gail. So, you know, I told myself, well, if I wasn't ready, they would have told me to go up there. So I think, I feel I'm ready. So
I went up. I'm very interested to hear something about training with George South, because that's a person we see around here. A lot of times if we have any kind of, any kind of memorial show or a Legends Fest or anything, George South is somebody who's always there and always interacting with the people. Now, you know, most people might hear George South's name and not know him right off, or they might think, well, that guy didn't win a lot of matches. But you have to learn an incredible amount working with someone who was able to hang around wrestling as long as he did, do as well at it, and not be a guy who was, you know, really big, or not be a guy who necessarily won a bunch of titles, but still was a great guy to be around.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. He's awesome. You know, I'll never forget every time, because we always talk, I always let him know and keep him updated on everything I have going on. And I'll never forget, like, the first time I came in there and he taught me my first bump, how to take a bump. He taught me, like, the basics of wrestling. And we used to, after learning all these different movesets and different things, he would make me stay in that ring for, like, going 30-minute matches, you know, 30-minute matches, put it together, you know, and go, and go, and go. And I'm so thankful that he did that, because he helped me so much to understand, like, how to tell a story in wrestling of what kind of character you want to portray, you know, how to put it together, how to work with different sizes. And he's a great teacher. We had so many students, even like Cedric Alexander, he's with Ring of Honor. So I trained with him, and he helped me so much when we trained with George. Like, George is a great teacher, you know. He's very motivating, and he always just reminds you, me, and all of us as students, like, to always be ourselves, you know, at what we're good at. Like, don't try to do things that, you know, you're not comfortable with doing, you know? So I took that as, okay, a reminder of my mind, like, just to always be myself, but also be this character that I know I can be. It's very cool.
Jonathan, get in there, because you know how I am.
Well, I'm curious about where does the Barbarian fit in? Did you train simultaneously? Or did you start with George South and then learn some stuff from Barbarian, or how did that whole process work?
Yep. When I first started, my uncle took me to George. They both started with me, and my uncle still travels a lot around the world, still wrestling. So whenever he would have time, he'd come in to check on me and work with me on certain things. And so he would randomly pop in whenever he's in town, because sometimes he'd be gone for 2 weeks, maybe overseas, South Africa, Japan, or somewhere. But whenever he had time, he'd come in and work with me. But I would always go, whenever there was training, I'd always be over there with George. Then Uncle would call and say, are you training tonight? And he'd show up if he was in town. So it was like really George, and then my uncle would come when he could, because he was always like still traveling around, like he is today, traveling around wrestling.
Yeah, he's still fairly regularly in Georgia, maybe not in the past year, but, you know, not long ago he was here on a fairly regular basis.
Yeah.
Still competing, and I think he was inducted into the NWA Atlanta Hall of Fame a few years ago.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So once you made it to TNA, I know at the time OVW was the developmental territory for them, but it seems like you went straight to TV and you were doing OVW and TNA at the same time for a while, right?
Yes.
So who was the main trainer at OVW when you were there, or who would you say you learned the most from between OVW and TNA?
Well, they had his training under Al. So mm-hmm. Al Snow, he had to do both with OVW and TNA. So that's like who I trained under over there, was just Al Snow. Al Snow training us in the ring to tell the story, you know, put it together, tell the story. And he helped me so much as a person grow in wrestling, because anytime I had a question or sometimes was unsure about something, I'd go to him, and then he'd tell me, but he'd give me options like, okay, look at it like this or look at it like this. Either way, it can work, you know? So that just helped me more, even with my confidence in the ring, outside the ring, and as a person. So Al Snow, he played a big part in my growing part process of wrestling and mentor of wrestling, too.
And you've mentioned it several times, you know, training, mm-hmm. tell a story. That's the only way to do it, as far as I'm mm-hmm. concerned. Do you find that you don't see enough of that around the scene as you're getting out?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When I first started wrestling and I was in the independence league, I said, you know, I just did whatever. If a person was more experienced, go ahead and tell you, don't leave that, do this or that. But when you get to that level up there of TV, it's so different, because they look at your size and how to make sense, make everything believable. Yeah. And with me, they're like, there ain't no way you should be bumping. They say, Tapa, there ain't no way you should be bumping. Girl, you better not fall on your butt. To see what happens. And I'm like, okay, fall. Stand next to this little girl. She ain't even touched your shoulder. Why is she going to hit you one time, you going to fall? I'm like,
But how are you going to turn a flip how are you going to turn a flip if that's the case? Somebody's got to turn a flip, right?
I did that one time. It was ODB came down to OVW, and she hadn't been there in a while. We did this thing, and I let ODB hit me, and I took a bump, but I flipped with it. Now, why would you do that? It just happened.
That is a commonality among people
like
with have. But when you've got really good size. And you've got a lot of skill. I know you want to get in there and show it off, but, man, that's the best way to make a veteran go crazy, is to go in there and some little girl hits you one time and you just flop all over the place.
Yeah. But that's a lot that I've learned of, like, playing the size. Like, they all, like me, I learned as a person, because I knew, like, no, in real life there's no way she could hit me once I'm going to fall down, you know?
Yeah.
It's like chopping down a giant. You know, you got to work them and break them all the way down. Then eventually you knock them off your feet type of thing. So now it's like I understand. I've grown so much with it. When was it? It started in 2011. It's 2015 now. I've grown so much to understand so much about wrestling and, like, telling a story. And when I started with TNA, I figured they're going to change my name, Lady Tapa. But they actually like my name. I think I told them what it meant. It's from my culture, because I'm from Tonga, and it's like Samoan, the Polynesian Islands, and Hawaii. And Lady Tapa, lei, you know, like the flower leis from Hawaii?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They're leis, so I figured L-E-I, and then my last name is Drone, so I added a D, Lady. And then Tapa, in my culture, Tonga, it's a mat that's made from a bark of a tree, and then they use the ink to tell the lineage of their family, and they draw out their story of their family history. So I was telling them that, and they liked that, because they were like, well, your name means something, so you need to tell your story, you know? So I was thankful they, like, loved my name and loved what it meant and kept it and loved the look, because in the independent scene, I was working that gimmick with my outfit. They loved that, too. They loved the big hair, so I was like, great. So it was a blessing, because sometimes you can go in there and they change everything about who you are, what they want you to be. So it was a blessing.
That's just, you know, that speaks to being prepared and putting something mm-hmm. into it, because if you go in with a reason, it's hard for someone, a thinking person, to just say, oh, no, I'm going to make you big hair. You're going to be big hair. Mm-hmm. If you've got a thing you're already doing and you've got a story behind it and it means something, and that's a motivational factor to you. And, you know, sort of the thing, all right, we let you keep your name, now you got to fucking make it work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm excited. And then to be able to just, we finished this with TNA. They had TNA versus Global Force Wrestling. And I'm excited for Global Force because Jeff Jarrett, you know, he's the founder of TNA. And now he's, like, started a whole new company, which I'm so excited about. And when he called me and asked me, hey, I want you to be a part of this this movement of my company, and he was just talking to me and telling me where he's wanting to go with it, I was so excited because I always love a person with vision, and I'm excited to grow with something that's just starting, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And how he's taking it and preparing it, I'm just so excited to see where it can go. You know, now you have, like, go ahead.
Do you know kind of what the next step for Global Force is?
From what I've heard, like, they're working on a deal with TV deal, just putting together different things that we've done on different shows. And they had the Las Vegas shows, which was amazing. I mean, I was just so stoked because, you know, you don't know how it's going to work out when it's your first show in this huge arena. Is it going to be packed? And it was packed. And it was so exciting to know that whatever that he's working on and the vision he has is coming together. And just to grab a lot of different wrestlers from the independent scene, wrestlers that work with WWE, TNA, you know, around the world, like what he's wanting to do is bringing all different wrestlers, but not only wrestlers, athletes and different other things that they do together. So it's exciting. Like, we'll see what happens.
And to the converse of that, you know, some of those shows, especially the ones in the baseball stadiums, they didn't attract quite as many people as everyone had hoped or maybe expected. Was everybody who worked on those shows okay? Did morale kind of stay up during that time?
Even though there wasn't that many people that came out, as far as, like, the talent, we went out there and made sure we put on a show, you know? Mm-hmm. We went out there, and it was awesome. Like, everyone did so good. At the end of the show, Joe Jarrett talked to all of us, you know, thanking all of us for being there. Like, I think at the end of the day, everyone's just grateful to be a part of something growing and something new and fresh, and not exactly knowing what's going to happen in the future, but knowing that if you believe that something great can come out of this and you're a part of it and making history with something fresh and new, that's the exciting part. But all the fans that were out there had a great time. Great time.
Well, there'll certainly be no shortage of excited people this Saturday at Sacred Ground when you take on Miss Rachel. And you might have given her the blueprint to maybe affect you. She might have to chop you down because you got some size on her. So strap it home.
No. Because I'm a pretty strong girl. I might just hit it one time and it's lights out. Who knows?
Who knows? That is, we don't know.
I just hope she's been doing what she needs to do because I'm coming. I'm coming for her. And I hope everyone out there in Atlanta is ready for this because it's a show you don't want to miss. And I know she's going to bring her game, but I'm a different kind of beast. You got to be ready for Lady Sabra.
I will not disagree with any of that.
Yeah. I'm curious, how many Global Force shows have you been involved with so far?
About seven. Seven so far. Yep. Seven shows. We did, I started off the Grand Slam Tour, and we worked Tennessee, we went Kentucky, and then where else did we go? We did the first TV taping in Las Vegas, and then we did this thing over here with TNA. Mm-hmm. And so, and then now, just getting ready. Right now they picked up a international deal for TV in the UK, I believe. So I think whatever he's doing, he's just laying out the blueprint of everywhere that he needs to touch base on around the world with what he's bringing together with other promotions overseas and going from there. So it's exciting.
What is the status of, you know, I understand Global Force was not victorious in the, I guess it was a Lethal Lockdown match for control of TNA. So what's the status of things there as far as you're concerned? Or do you have any more TNA matches scheduled, or has anything, has everything already been recorded?
Yeah, we're done over there. But like right now, as of right now, I have an option of going wherever I want to go. Like, it's not like I'm an independent contractor, so it's not like I signed a contract with Global Force or TNA, but mm-hmm. I know that TNA, like, they talked to me and they were like, you've grown so much, like, you're just like a different person now. So it was nothing but good talk, so we'll see what happens and where I go. But I'm also interested in even looking at going to WWE, which I have never been, but I, starting when I first started training, that was my goal of going up there. So I know they know about me. I think everything is just timing. To me, I think everything is timing in wrestling. It's the right time to bring in whatever person for whatever story being told.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could see, well, you know, I think the first round in TNA, you were the way you were handled there reminds me a lot of how Tamina is handled in WWE, which is, mm-hmm. I think, very underused, especially considering your size over, you know, over the other female competitors there. But I'd love to see you in WWE, either in some kind of alliance with Tamina or, you know, in opposition to her. I don't know if you mm-hmm. know her at all or if there's any
uh-huh.
relation there, but it just seems like a natural fit there.
Yeah. We'll see. You never know. Wrestling's always something new, something surprising. So
right.
We'll see.
So I'm curious, back, you know, when you left TNA the first time, at that point, OVW was no longer their developmental territory, but I think you went back there for a little while, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. After TNA parted ways with OVW, I just wanted to be there and keep training and keep working their shows. And then after a while, I just felt inside my heart like, okay, because when I was down there, I went to this other place to start training jiu-jitsu. But then it's like I had a home in Charlotte, so I wanted to get back to Charlotte and just start training down here and be around here at home, because I was up there specifically just for TNA. So I just stayed out there and just kept training and doing their shows until, like, my lease was up for my apartment to come back, because I had a home in Charlotte. Come back home and start training and working the independent scene and just keeping myself busy, working the independent scene and training in jiu-jitsu at the time. And then it brought me back around, you know, back around to TNA, and then started something fresh with Global Force Wrestling. So
what was it like working with Kong, who, as you may or may not know, was involved with the very first Sacred Ground show?
Oh, man, she's awesome. Like, she's tough. Like, you know, because me growing up, and when I started watching TNA and WWE, like, I've been watching it, but when I seen her, she just stands out. And she's, like, she does not play, but when me and her, like, when we battled it out, I don't know, working with her is like making magic, you know? It's, like, something totally different that you can bring to, not thing that's just little girls, but usually you see smaller girls going all the time. It's rare that you ever see two big girls going at it with each other, you know? So, I mean, she's a tough competitor, and I enjoy working with her. And I think my next step, I'm looking at doing some shows in Japan, so I'm excited for that. And I have some other shows coming up in the Bahamas with different promotions. So just being able to branch off and going overseas now is like starting to happen to just get my name out there more, make a name for myself, you know. And, yeah, my uncle's the barbarian. But sometimes it's like, you know, you wanna make your own, like, by not, like, oh, that's Anissa the barbarian. Like, it's like you want to make a name for yourself by working hard, you know, showing them, keep training and keep pushing yourself to the limit, like trying new things. And I'm excited. Everything is just, it's a journey. That's what I say, it's a journey. You never know what's going to happen in wrestling. You never know what's going to come. But when it comes, take the opportunity, run with it, make the best of it. And in wrestling, you're always going to continue to learn and grow.
Right. When it comes to the jiu-jitsu and MMA training that you're doing, competing now that you're doing, are you wanting to do that in wrestling simultaneously, or is there one, do you prefer one over the other?
I don't prefer one over the other. I'm honestly wanting to wrestle and hopefully bring my jiu-jitsu in that game of both worlds, you know? Like, my goal is to fight in MMA and hopefully get a contract and drop some. I'm going to drop some weight. My goal, I'm 200 pounds now, but my goal is to get down to 180, 175, and hopefully get picked up in the MMA world and fight in the cage. I'm not sure how it's all going to fall into place, but it's just something that I envision with myself of bringing both worlds together, if that makes sense. Like saying I have a contract with WWE and UFC or something, and somehow kind of like a Brock Lesnar type thing, you know, and do something like that as a female, you know? That's what I had in my mind. But
it definitely seems
crazy right now, but I can make it happen. I'm just going to keep working hard.
Right. It seems like it's more and more likely to happen, especially, well, you know, when TNA was still on Spike, there was a lot of crossover between TNA and Bellator. And now, of course, Brock Lesnar is a good example. CM Punk and the whole thing with Ronda Rousey at WrestleMania. Uh-huh. You know, that could be some great matches in WWE or UFC in the future for, you know, you and Ronda Rousey. If not, I don't know if you're in the same weight class or whatever, but seems like there's a lot of potential there.
So I'm excited. We'll just see where it all goes. I just live in the moment day by day, keep doing what I enjoy doing in life, and train my butt off and never stop learning. But I can't wait for Saturday. I'm so ready. I'm so ready to get in there.
Well, being that you're based in North Carolina, and, you know, there's a lot of big promotions in the Carolinas that a lot of Georgia guys wrestle at and vice versa. So are you, you think we might see you again in Georgia, or, you know, are there any Georgia based wrestlers that you may have seen in North Carolina that you'd like to get in the ring with or anything like that?
Yeah, I've worked with Amber O'Neill. I know she's down there in, Georgia. We've worked together, and, I believe I'm coming back over there too. I can't tell you the date because I don't really know everything, but I know I'll be back in Atlanta sometime in November.
For PCW or another promotion?
Yes. For PCW.
Oh, okay. Well, looking forward to finding out more about that when the time is right to make those details available.
Well, I don't know if I was supposed to say that.
Oh, well.
You know that.
Any promotion's good promotion.
Any promotion is a good promotion.
All right. Well, that's all I got for you, Matt. Do you have anything else?
I think we have cleared it all. Very excited about seeing you on Saturday. Hopefully you'll take it easy on our girl. But no, I know she's going to be fierce. I know you'll be ready, but it's going to be exciting. Sacred Ground is a giant show for PCW every year. This one is extremely special as they're in a special building this year, so it is going to be something that is guaranteed to excite and tease and tantalize.
Oh, I'm excited, and I enjoyed talking with you guys. Thank you so much for having me on your show. And looking forward to Saturday.
Yeah, thank you for calling in, and good luck on Saturday. I know,
thank you.
Matt said, that crowd is solidly behind Mr. and solidly against the man bringing him. So you might have, obviously, kind of an away thing against you, but you got a lot going for you as well. So it'll be a great match.
A pretty imposing figure. So it might turn him pretty quickly. And that music, it's terrifying.
I'm just going to make that whole crowd bow down. I don't even care. They could be behind her, but they're going to all bow down to me. How about that?
Shots fired. Well done.
All right. Well, thanks again for calling in, and we'll see you on Saturday.
Thank you. Have a good night.
All right. You too.
Bye.
You know, I actually sat down with Quasiman Disco today for an interview that will be posted on. What's that?
God bless you.
He didn't have his white pants or his earrings on, so.
That was a shock.
Saw a slightly different side of him, but, you know, the Man Disco we all know and dislike was there. And you can read all about it on WrestlingWithPopCulture.com in the next couple of days. He did, of course, talk about the match with Lady Tapa and Miss Rachel, among other things. He, as a lot of people probably know, he's a DJ at the infamous Claremont Lounge. He also DJs for the Atlanta Ballet, so dancing on both ends of the spectrum there. like I said, it's not completely confirmed, but it looks like we will be talking to Ricky Morton next week. We're also going to have someone from Southern Fried Championship Wrestling because they still have, October 2nd, the AIWF tournament continues. A lot of great names in that. Sugar Dunkerton, Ethan Case, who's a guy we used to see quite a lot of in Georgia that we don't see as much of anymore. But I will let everybody know later in the week once we've confirmed who it will be. So we'll have two guests next week. I think that's about it. I guess this is a good forum for this. I'm looking for interns for Wrestling with Pop Culture.
God.
So if anybody interested in working with an award-winning blog, as well as, tangentially, that would include Georgia Wrestling Now as well.
Yeah, my coffee cup's been empty all night.
You can email me at jw@wrestlingwithpopculture.com. I think I got the writing part covered, but if someone is a talented writer and wants to write about wrestling or music or movies or whatever, I'm willing to talk to you about that. Photography is something I could use some help with. Ad sales, promotions, things of that nature. So, Georgia Wrestling World, if anybody's interested, please email me and just let me know what you're interested in and we'll work something out. I'm not sure who's on Tipping Point tomorrow or the other shows, but check out gwhnewsandnotes.blogspot.com to find out more about the entire, it seems to be growing ever so slowly, GWH Radio Network. What do we have? 4 shows now. So 4 nights a week, you can listen live. Well, in the case of FOW, not live, but
You can also listen to the archives at your convenience. So check it out. We are on iTunes and Stitcher, something I forget to mention each week. So you can download it, listen to it anywhere that you go with your iPhone or whatever. I guess that's it. You got anything else, Matt, before we go?
Take the Ground Chapter 6, two shows, Porterdale at 5, Avondale at 7 o'clock.
And I understand there are buses.
Sold out, baby. So if you ain't on the list, you're going to be driving. But we invite
the buses
you
are sold
to
out.
Come along. Yes, sir.
All right. Well, I am interested to see or hear how things go at the Avondale show, given that that building has been completely remodeled since the days of PCW there. So I'm sure both halves of the event will be great. So everybody check it out. Let me see what else, any other big shows this weekend that we should mention?
I believe NW Atlanta will be going on as well. And that's all that I know of.
I don't see a whole lot. The Southern Championship Wrestling runs, I believe, every Saturday, right? So they got a show.
Yeah, or twice or Sunday. If Woody's awake, he's probably running a show.
Yep. But you can go to gwhnewsandnotes.blogspot.com and click on upcoming events. It's got several weeks worth of upcoming wrestling events in and around Georgia. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next Monday, and I'm sure we'll have plenty to talk about.
We thank you for listening to this broadcast, a production brought to you by the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com for the latest information on upcoming events and more. As always, we thank you for your continued support.